It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. In 2016, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump turned Pennsylvania red for the first time in years. He won the state by 44,000 votes, a 0.7% margin over Hillary Clinton. So what is the Republican plan during these last 4 weeks of the campaign to hold on to Pennsylvania? Lawrence Tabus is the chair of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. Welcome to the Confluence.
Well, thank you very much. Happy to be here.
The last time Republicans won Pennsylvania in consecutive presidential contests was actually, I believe, three straight, 1980, 84, and 88. So what's it going to take to repeat this year?
Well, I think that we have been building and working towards this since the president was elected in November. And we are confident because we have seen the Democratic voter registration advantage in this state shrink by over 192,000 voters since the president was elected. And now that he has a program and promises that he kept from the campaign, the president appeals to Democrats, independents, and Republicans. And that strategy and our grassroots effort, we are confident, will get him a much larger majority in Pennsylvania this time than he had in 2016.
Donald Trump flipped Luzerne, Erie, and Northampton counties, which had voted for Barack Obama in 2012, and he took historically Republican counties and made them redder. So what's your focus this time around?
We're starting again with our grassroots on that same platform. We've been enhancing in areas that we know that we can do better than we did in 2016, and we're showing demonstrable gains there. But our strategy of going out and showing what the president was able to accomplish before we were hit by this pandemic clearly demonstrates that he is the best person to revive our economy. We also, Kevin, are voting and running against Tom Wolf in a way. I mean, Tom Wolf's handling of the businesses and the economy and the closing down of Pennsylvania in his arbitrary fashion has shown to have been a boost to us.
COVID-19 is the number one issue for Democratic voters in Pennsylvania, according to a recent Quinnipiac poll, but the economy is the number one issue among all voters. Are you focusing on one or the other?
COVID-19 is both a health crisis and an economic crisis, and both have to be addressed. Our governor focused mostly only on the health piece of it without realizing that you cannot really revive the health and safety of Pennsylvanians without focusing on the economic piece. But the economy is our number one issue because that's where we have to get this nation back on track. That will help everybody recover from COVID-19 by providing additional resources to help those that are in need, to provide the money and the funds to make sure that research and development of not only therapeutic drugs, but the vaccines are available and can be distributed.
Are you concerned at all about the president's messaging around the virus, including not emphasizing mask wearing? Are you concerned that that will hurt your ability to convince voters that the Republican Party in Pennsylvania is taking COVID seriously?
The president is taking COVID seriously. He has from the very beginning. His quick move to shut down the borders with China and then other nations as well, the putting together of one of the greatest task forces using protocols from the Defense Department to be able to expedite and accelerate the research and development of vaccines and therapeutic drugs. COVID is a major priority for him, and it is for us. And we want to find quick remedies and vaccines for everybody. That's why we are looking at the potential for a vaccine in a short period of time. It's the president who made sure that the resources were there to do that.
In 2016, Mr. Trump led Hillary Clinton by 3 percentage points among white women in Pennsylvania. What are you trying to win back women's votes? Latest Washington Post poll showed Biden leading Trump among white women voters by 13 percentage points in the Commonwealth and by 23 percentage points among all women voters in the state?
There is strong interest amongst the women voters in getting the economy back up on its feet. There are many women and men in the workforce who are anxious to get back to work.
The president was making progress in Pennsylvania in polls in early and mid-September, but recent polls show among likely voters, Biden's margin is nearing or at double digits. So what can be done to erase that lead if the polls are right?
You're correct, if the polls are right. A poll is a snapshot in time. President Trump was way behind in the polls in 2016, all the way up through Election Day. What we're finding is that there are an enormous number of voters from, again, Democrats, Independents, and Republicans. But I would tell you, Kevin, the number one poll is this voter registration.
In 2018, the Democrats flipped four U.S. House seats to make the congressional delegation even at 9-9. Are you concentrating on certain districts to regain control of the delegation?
This year, we are focusing on all 18 of the seats. I am optimistic that we have a very good shot of winning up to three of those seats back and may surprise in a couple of others.
How much focus is the party putting on legislative races? Republicans control both chambers, the House, I believe it's 26-seat margin, the Senate by 7. How much emphasis are you placing on that to maintain control?
Enormous emphasis. We have devoted a very substantial portion of our resources as well to make sure that we not only maintain those majorities, but we'll enhance them. And Kevin, there's a critical reason for that. We have seen since March of this year the way that Governor Wolf acts and tries to control government on his own, in secret, behind closed doors, often with people who may not be the best and the highest qualified for the jobs and the roles that they're performing.
But hasn't Pennsylvania done better than a lot of states in at least trying to control COVID? I mean, other states, it's completely out of control.
I can't comment on that other than to say what other states are doing, other than to say that it's not so much the steps that are taken. It's the method by which the governor has acted in an arbitrary manner on his own without consultation and with inconsistency.
Lawrence Tabus is the chair of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. For 17 years, StoryCorps has been sharing and preserving the stories of our lives of more than a half million Americans. Through its One Small Step project, StoryCorps is bringing people together, including here in Pittsburgh, with differing views for a conversation. Jacqueline Van Meter is the radio relations manager with One Small Step. Jacqueline, welcome.
Thank you, Kevin. Good to be here.
One Small Step was actually created a couple years ago. Does it seem even more important than ever with all the heated rhetoric, disagreement over everything from the pandemic, the economic shutdown, to racial and social injustice?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the initial idea with One Small Step was really born out of the division that we saw after the 2016 election. And it just seems like things have really amped up from there this year in particular. With COVID-19 keeping us more isolated than ever, people are exhausted and they're looking for a variety of ways to just connect and feel a sense of hope again. And we've seen a ton of response from people across the country and certainly right there in Pittsburgh.
When we talk about people who disagree, how do you deal with, do you avoid people who fundamentally don't believe in certain human rights, for example, transgender rights or someone of a different religion?
Well, you know, that's the tough balance. And a lot of work goes into thinking about who we're going to pair people with. Certainly, the premise of One Small Step is primarily to bring together strangers who don't know each other. And the idea is that they will disagree. And that's the reason that they need to sit down. There are certain considerations that we take into account. But ultimately, people who sign up for this want to talk to someone different from them. And they want to see if there's a way that they can connect with the humanity of someone, even if they staunchly disagree with them. And so, you know, to some extent, we are careful about how we pair folks. And we have really honest conversations with people before they sit down with their conversation partner to make sure that they understand what they're getting into and that they're prepared to be in the presence of someone they disagree with.
the mission of One Small Step is to remind people that those they disagree with are human beings. That seems so fundamental. To some, though, the framing in my way seemed jarring or extreme. Why did you use that language?
Well, we just see more and more how divided people are getting. And we also sort of live in our own echo chambers and our own bubbles. And folks on both sides of the aisle agree with that. We just don't have that same level of sort of bipartisan day-to-day interaction that, you know, folks remember. And so we, the more that we sort of see ourselves dividing, the more important it is for us to say, listen, there are people out there that, share your concerns, that live in your community, that might think differently than you. And we're not inviting people to necessarily battle it out and to talk through their issues. Simply, we want to create connections between community members so that when they hear the stories of what's coming from the other side, it isn't some mysterious monster with no face. They can think and recall and activate relationships they have with community members that they've just met who come from that perspective, who can offer a different point of view.
Jacqueline, are there some fundamental truths that you found most people can agree on right now?
Absolutely. I think that people are tired of being told what to think. People are much more inclined to want to just hear the real stories from their neighbors and, fellow community members. I think everyone feels like they're under this force of influence that's just tiring them out. And they all want the same things, right? They all want their families to be safe and their children to have economic opportunities for the communities to grow and thrive. Everybody wants that. And what they find is that, the strategies might be a little different from how to get there.
What's the most memorable conversation that's come out of this project? Maybe something that really illustrates how One Small Step is fulfilling its mission?
I think in Pittsburgh, certainly y'all have recorded a number of really fascinating conversations. What tends to be really interesting is seeing folks who, kind of bump up against these barriers, like, this is my experience, with this particular issue, and that's why this policy is so important to me, because it impacts me personally. And then someone on the other side will say, well, that kind of goes against my fundamental religious beliefs, and you always expect that's going to be an impasse. But then there are these moments of profound empathy and compassion and patience and understanding, and I don't know, that's what comes to mind for me in terms of one that was recently recorded in Pittsburgh. It's just hearing people arrive at a place where there's an impasse, but at the same time, being able to really listen to one another and not shut one another down and say, wow, this is hard. This is not going to be easy, but let's keep talking. Let's stay in touch.
Jacqueline Van Meter is the Radio Relations Manager with the One Small Step Project of StoryCorps. Jacqueline, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Kevin. We appreciate it.
And now here's the first installment of One Small Step. 31-year-old John Durfee of Mars, Butler County, says his Christian faith influences his political leanings. And for 28-year-old Emily Miller from Shaler, it's her personal experience.
I think that education and mental health is the two biggest things that we need to focus on. For me, I had a teacher in high school, and I was not in a very good time in my life. I had experienced a sexual assault and was barely making it to classes. And she was one of my teachers that was just super there for me. And I realize now just, how important those things are and how impactful my education was. And if they could have just done more with me. Could you briefly describe in your own words your personal political values?
I always believed in God growing up. What I kind of come back to is I got to believe somebody's a lot smarter than me. Normally it's people, but people are always wrong too. And one of the big driving things in my faith is appreciating that we're broken, we can't know it all. And even when people come together, they still make bad choices. I've seen too many times when I've just been so wrong and felt so right that I have trouble believing we can come up with an absolute standard. I'm pretty firm in the Republican side for most moral items, so I don't support abortion. Generally for economic stuff too, more towards free market, cutting back regulation. At the same time, I think if people are getting left behind, we're doing something wrong. Is there something about my beliefs you don't agree with, but still respect?
You know, there's certain things that you bring up, and I am respectful of the way that you brought them up. But I feel like some of those views aren't respectful to the people that you have the opinion of. Like for me, abortion. My father is Republican and extremely religious. And we actually got into a disagreement a couple months ago, which I'm no longer speaking to him over. He feels that nobody should have an abortion, even if it was from rape or incest or whatever. And I just kept thinking of my sexual assault and what if I got pregnant from that? And then I would have to look at that child who I know I would love because it's mine, but every day think about that night and that PTSD. It just, wow, that's rough. That is mean. That is not giving somebody the respect that they need for that situation.
I can feel, Emily, I can feel the pain behind what you're trying to share. And that's real. And that's something that everybody brings to the table when we talk about stuff like this. What you're describing is a choice. It's because you see it as a choice for the individual. And I, you know, just recognize I look at it as you're making a choice affecting two individuals. And the problem is we're not really going to come together.
No.
Because the basic assumption is different.
No, that's huge, though, that the looking at it, it's the same issue, but it's two completely separate parts.
It's hard because I know I'm not coming from the same place and I haven't felt the same pain. And like I talked about earlier, when I felt so strongly about something, like I really feel like I'm right. But at the same time, I know I'm not seeing it on both sides. And I think I already said earlier, the reason to believe it, that somebody's a lot smarter than me is that I can be wrong.
Yeah.
Which is why I've kind of taken to trusting that God's got the right answer for me. I think when you're talking to a person about something, that you can't and you shouldn't get away from the fact that, like you said, you're supposed to respect the person and recognize nobody's perfect.
It's really funny because part of me just wants to cry, right? I know that I'm a very intense person. It's hard to try to stay reserved. And at the same time, like, even though we don't agree, like, I want to hug you.
Likewise, it's been really good to be able to talk to somebody who's willing to sit and listen. I'd also second that I cry at Disney movies, so.
I just watched one the other day for the first time and definitely was like, it's 5 minutes in and I'm already crying. I'm glad we're not alone.
Yes.
John Durfee of Mars speaking with Emily Miller from Shaler. One Small Step is a collaboration between StoryCorps and WESA and is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Julia Zenkovic, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.